Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Damn You Hollywood. I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm here with Mark Radulich. I'm very grateful Mark's here, not just because he's not feeling well today and is kind of gutting through this, but because, for those of you who don't remember, a couple of weeks ago when it was last week when Mark and I reviewed whatever that thing was, I literally forgot about it. He said that if he could not find even base entertainment value in Transformers The Last Night, he was going to call it quits, at least for this show. I was going to have to call up somebody else and, you know, do the show with someone else, which is not the worst thing in the world. There's a lot of great people who are more than happy to, you know, pinch hit as far as that goes. But I'm so glad Mark is here because he and I need to have this discussion. This needs to be us. There's some really, like, poetic justice. Justice is a bit strong, but there is poetic, you know, merit and artistic merit to the fact that he and I, after, you know, 2 years ago having a 3.5-hour screaming match over Age of Extinction, which is still terrible, by the way, have now come to this with Transformers The Last Night. And one of us is going to be proved, and sorry, proved is really the wrong word here, but it is those two opposing views that are finally going to clash over this, and we're going to settle it, I hate to say once and for all, because, well, there's more of these movies coming, but at least for the sake of this little, you know, two-part of whatever of this, I think they're planning a trilogy as far as, you know, you had the trilogy with Shitty LaBeouf. Now you got the trilogy that was supposed to be with Mark Wahlberg, but Mark Wahlberg looked at this movie and said, "I ain't having no more of that." So I'm looking forward to this one. So Mark, thank you for being here, and I do hope you feel better. And I promise not to yell at you too much because I know you're, you know, under the weather.
I think this one may have broken me. When you lose me in the Transformers franchise, you done fucked up. Look, I was genuine in my love of Age of Extinction. I really do enjoy that movie. Here's my problem with The Last Night. This was one of those, like, this was kind of like porn, where it was entertaining what was in front of me. I know I've used this before, but, like, the flashing images on the screen were entertaining, but when it was over, I was like, okay, well, that wasn't good. But, yep, I was entertained for 2.5 hours. And that's it. And I didn't feel that way about Age of Extinction or Dark of the Moon or the original Transformers movie. I genuinely enjoyed those movies. Revenge of the Fallen is terrible. But this isn't even a well-made movie. Like, this fell in quality from the previous ones, which is a weird thing to say about a Michael Bay, you know, robot schlockfest. But I am bereft of enthusiasm for talking about this. I'm here. Dude. This is the crown jewel of Transformers Week, so we're going to talk about it. But I just want you all to know I'm not happy about it.
Yeah. I just want to say, I want this on record. Mark, please tell me I was right.
But that this is terrible?
Yes.
Yeah. You kept saying it was going to be bad. And I said, no, it'll, I'm sure they'll at least be able to competently tell a story. You were right.
Thank you.
They really dropped the ball on this one. I don't know. Maybe next year's Bumblebee spinoff will be better.
I doubt it. At this rate, I'm not sure that movie gets made, but we'll save that for when we talk about the money.
Yeah.
That kind of covers our expectation bit, actually. And just for the record, I have to say that I'm wrong frequently on this show and on others. So it's nice to be right every now and then. All right. Again, since that kind of covers expectation, I mean, again, we rebroadcast the episode of, Age of Extinction review. For those of you who hadn't found it on Mark's YouTube channel, it is now in the archives here, I believe.
Yep.
So feel free to listen to that. It's, again, like 3.5 hours of Mark and I discussing that movie, which is shocking because it's so bad. But I digress. Sorry. Cheap shot. Don't want to take too many of those. It's shocking that two people who have such different opinions on that movie and who are both so – I mean, you and I are both perfectly capable of – agreeing to disagree both with each other and other people and just, shake hands. Okay. We disagree. Fair play. We're still friends.
I went back and listened to it. We really picked that movie apart.
Which it didn't deserve. When I say it didn't deserve, I mean, it's not worth the time and effort we put into it.
We broke that shit down like Citizen Kane. And Citizen Transformer, this is not. All right, let's get to the plot.
All right. We open with a flashback to AD 484 and King Arthur, because I imagine that's the only medieval character Michael Bay or whoever wrote this piece of crap had ever heard of. So we open there, and they're engaged in a battle. And they're clearly trying to channel the opening battle from Gladiator and failing miserably. And we also... Okay, I need to... This is a minor craft thing that I have to put out there just because I'm going to reference it more than once. And I apologize in advance for doing this a little bit out of order. Michael Bay's sense of humor in film and sense of comedic timing in film are terrible. They are just terrible. Needs to be said. They're, again, fighting this battle to stave off the Vikings and the Saxons, and their only hope is Merlin, a slightly drunk Stanley Tucci. And the drunk Merlin is just stupid. It's just stupid. Merlin goes to a wrecked ship, a wrecked alien vessel. I'm sure all the people from Ancient Aliens are just happy as, a pig in shit. And he gets some power from the Transformers who've been on Earth forever, apparently. They form King Ghidorah, the giant flying three-headed dragon. Turn the tide of battle, save Camelot, all of which is narrated by Anthony Hopkins. And I hope he cashed that check, man. I really do. That's all I'm saying about his performance. Okay, so it's narrated by him, and it's the crappy pre-title sequence where, pay attention. This stuff matters, and it doesn't. Back to the present day. We get an exposition dump, and there's a lot of those here. The governments of the world have come together. They can't come together on anything, mind you, but they've come together on this. And Transformers are now illegal aliens. See, it's
funny. Which I thought they were in the last movie. I thought the Transformers were illegal in the last movie. That's how they were ending up with the Transformium.
I know, right? And yet, apparently not. Because they felt the need to, I don't know, take it a step further. I don't know. It's stupid. It's just stupid. There's so much stupid in this movie. Anyway, they've been declared illegal. They're being hunted down by an international task force known as the TRF. And we show up in what I believe is the remnants of Chicago following the only decent part of the third Transformers movie, which is the last, like, that movie is so stupid, but the last third is pretty good. Which begs the question, why in the intervening years since that movie, and there have been quite a few in terms of passage of time within that universe, why they haven't rebuilt anything? I mean, millions of people live in Chicago.
I don't know how fair that is. I mean, that's just one football field, which they may not, you know, which they can't get football fields in Brazil to soccer fields in Brazil to, you know, to operate after like the Olympics and shit. So, I mean, it just might have been that one particular football field. You don't see any other part of Chicago. The rest of it might be fine.
It speaks to a larger issue I have with this movie as far as continuity of world, but I'll get to that later. Anyway, a bunch of dumbass kids, because it's a Michael Bay movie, sneak into this area that says restricted, you will be shot on sight. They are nearly shot on sight because, I mean, at that point, I kind of feel they deserve it.
Because you will be shot on sight. We were made very clear about that.
I mean, they all saw the signs. Like, they actually pause and read the signs that say, you will be shot on sight. And they kind of go, no, this is still a good idea. Okay, at this point, we're, like, doing the Lord's work and as far as cleaning the gene pool. They are rescued by our tough, no-nonsense 14-year-old kid who I wanted to die. I hate children in movies so frequently. They're rescued by her and a random Transformer, but it doesn't last because they're in a restricted zone that the government is closely monitoring. Said Transformer winds up dying. We're introduced to stupid sidekick to teenage girl. Then as the group goes into air, because they think there's a legitimate argument that they believe the children are in danger at the hands of these robots. So as they prepare to show up to get the children out of the dangerous zone, in comes Bumblebee and Mark Wahlberg, blow up a few things. Little girl cries over dead Autobot. It was the last. I hate that character so much. Mark Wahlberg threatens to punch a child in the face as he's escorting them out of the zone. And really, you shouldn't want to root for a grown man to punch a 12-year-old in the face. But I kind of was. Like, you're going to say the threat, you should follow through. You got to make an example, right? But he doesn't. Kids leave. The 14-year-old girl does not wish to leave because she, like so many other people in this world, is a mechanical prodigy. I mean, seriously, mechanical prodigy. She wants to go with Cade because she's lost her family and she hates the Decepticons and she doesn't want to go into foster care and she's a strong, independent woman who doesn't need no man. We find where Cade is hiding briefly before they leave the restricted zone because Cade's he's seriously wanted. Everybody wants this guy. He and Bumblebee are able to escape. We're reintroduced to Josh Duhamel's character of something Lennox from the original trilogy. He was one of the highlights of those movies, even in the terrible ones. He escapes. Now, free of incident, he takes the little girl with him. They go back to his junkyard on an Indian reservation, where he's hiding out, but not before Bumblebee is tagged with a tracking device, so now the jig is up. We are reintroduced to the group from the last episode, from the last movie, Ken Watanabe's character, John Goodman's character, and the random British guy trying to sound like Jason Statham. Cade, the only salient points here are the little girl's obnoxious. Cade is struggling with the fact that his daughter's gone off to college and he's an outlaw and can't really communicate or have a relationship with her. And he's trying to raise these, like, baby Dinobots, which is a terrible idea. This goes south because off in the vast recesses of space, after Optimus Prime sprouted intergalactic rockets at the end of Age of Extinction, he has found Cybertron again. An impressive bit of, you know, I mean, he must have been hauling some serious ass. I mean, those rockets are powerful things. I mean, the distances, people, he finally lands on Cybertron and is captured by Quintessa, who is nothing but our evil MacGuffin. She wants to utilize Prime's abilities, because Optimus Prime is awesome, to reclaim the staff that was given to Merlin in the prologue and drain the life out of the planet Earth, which is actually Unicron, which they threw out there like it means nothing. I mean, it really bothered me. Like, genuinely bothered me. Like, no, it's Unicron. It's not Earth. It's Unicron. Like, no, we're not living on a... So... I know who Unicron is. Mark now knows who Unicron is. I mean, because, you know, you guys watched the good movie, the animated one, not too long ago.
I saw it when it was in theaters. I've known who Unicron is since I was a child.
I know. I'm giving you a hard time there. I apologize. That didn't come across as me jokingly poking at you. No, so yeah, it's Unicron, and they want to drain his life force to reform Cybertron, which, okay. I mean, I hate that they threw out Unicron like it means nothing and tried to use it for a crappy sequel bait later, but not the worst plot line from a Transformers movie. So they send they somehow propel the remains of the planet. I don't know what force they're using for planetary propulsion, but they have it. They propel Cybertron
gravity
towards Earth.
It's gravity. It's just falling. Because in Michael Bay's universe, there's gravity in space.
Fair enough. meanwhile, back on Earth, I forget the gentleman's name, the actor. A NASA scientist discovers that there's a giant planet that's going to collide with Earth. And he is subsequently poo-pooed by people because Michael Bay can't decide whether or not he likes science or hates it. He has a very abusive relationship with it, where we start here in Honeymoon, and, you know, the White House aide that he's trying to brief is a jackass and just won't listen. And then by the end, the scientist who wants to use science to solve the problem is made to look like a moron because he's hit the abusive stage of the cycle. So they're trying to figure out what's going on. This is all... Oh, sorry. I forgot one point. Before they left Chicago, Cade found a dying Autobot who gave him a talisman. It's actually Excalibur. That is one of the signs of, you know, the end of days. And now... And this has all been observed by Anthony Hopkins, who orchestrates the bringing of Cade Yeager to him, as well as a British professor of, like, three different things, history, philosophy, and I can't remember the other one. Anyway, it really doesn't matter. He brings them together because she is the last blood relative of Merlin, and since the staff was encoded with his DNA, only a direct descendant can use it, and we get a massive exposition dump from Anthony Hopkins, as well as the introduction of Hot Rod with a crappy French accent, another thing that really pissed me off about this movie. they're told you must save the world because that's how these things go. And everyone kind of goes along with it. In the case of this British doctor whose name I can't remember, Vivian, I think, because her father was, she's got dad issues. Details were never given, but she's got dad issues, and it turns out her father wasn't a crazy old man. He was right, and now she's struggling a bit with that, even though she's not really struggling because, well, you know, acting range. She and Cade tear apart her father's office, find a clue, find hints, find the staff's location, find an ancient submarine that still works, and his room is, they mention it being a transformer, but that's never actually confirmed or discussed further. They find the staff, Cybertron arrives, Optimus Prime is turned evil under the influence of Quintessa. And you'll notice that, by the way, Megatron's kind of a thing through part of this, but he's so marginalized, I'm not even going to mention him because you could have done this whole movie without him. Anyway, Cybertron shows up, starts draining energy from Earth to reconstitute itself. There's a battle scene. Optimus Prime is saved by Bumblebee speaking with his normal voice again. Bumblebee promptly goes back to using sound clips because continuity. They do their darndest to stop, Cybertron from sucking all the geothermal energy out of Earth. The plan of science fails, but our heroes triumph in the end, saving the world, but the horns of Unicron have started sprouting from various places around the Earth, and we are left with the teaser of, no, our whole planet's going to turn into a giant robot that then proceeds to go forth and devour other planets. All right. Mark, help me out here, please. Anything that I know I glossed over stuff there.
I'm going to be honest, the last couple of minutes, I don't even think I was listening.
Oh, thanks. You're just like the rest of our audience.
I'm sorry. I honestly nodded off there for a minute.
Hey, look, if my dulcet tones can lull someone to sleep, I will count that as a win. Something I can add to my resume, I suppose.
It's not you, it's me. I'm not well. All right. I think you got it, what I was awake for.
I mean, let me say briefly, I skipped over a couple of things. One,
The Megatron scene where he's recruiting his army is hilarious.
And so unnecessary because they're all dead 5 minutes later. It's dumb. It's just dumb. I skipped over Megatron. I skipped over Anthony Hopkins dying. There's a lot of characters I left out because they don't need to be discussed. For a movie that you can sum up that briefly, and really, if you cut out some of my editorializing there, it's a really straightforward thing. This movie sure drags ass.
All right. So here are my thoughts. As I said before, this is not a well-made movie. It's, if you like a lot of action and you don't need it to be coherent, it's perfectly entertaining. I'm not saying I always need my action to be coherent, but just because you have action on a screen doesn't make that a good movie. You know, my favorite thing has been reading the audience reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, because a lot of it is people yelling at those who have given it a low review, like, oh, you people just like French movies. All right. Take it easy. I get the audience out there. Like, one person wrote, like, my son thought it was great. He's 13. Like, I totally sympathize with those audience members. This is why I'm not really, really bashing the movie as such. But this is a critical review, and we would be remiss if we didn't criticize the elements of it. A lot of the action, while visually stimulating, is still incoherent. Like, he loses track of a lot of shots. And there are things happening on screen that don't make any sense. There are things set up in the movie that don't make any sense. I think one of the things that really bothered me was they spent a lot of time building up Vivian, saying that she was the heir of Merlin, and sending her on this, like, adventure. And then it's like, you have to be the one to take control of the staff. It's, you know, our fate lies in your hands. What did she do with it? They literally get on the ship, and the ship flips over, and the thing, she grabs it and then does nothing with it, and then it disappears.
Yeah, she pulls it out of the thing. That's all she does. It's literally all she does.
Okay. So unless what they're implying is that she's the only human being that can touch it, then I don't understand what the point of her being in this movie was. I also don't understand why Mark Wahlberg was in this movie. Why, like, I understand he got the talisman that made him the last knight because it was Excalibur. But to what function? To what purpose? He literally does one thing with it, and that is he stops the Knights of Lasan from killing Optimus Prime. And then it's over. That, like literally it was called Transformers. Transformers. Mark Wahlberg saves Optimus Prime once. That's it. That's all that happens there. Like, they called this the last night, and then they did nothing with that element of the movie. One of the things I absolutely hated about it was, and we talked about this offline, there's a great story to be told of Prime's fall from grace and being overtaken by Quintessa. And if the movie had been about Prime trying to get the staff, and he wasn't like a bit player in his own movie, I think this would have been much more enjoyable. But instead, you spend 90% of the movie with Jaeger and Vivian and Sir Anthony Hopkins, and you spend 2% of the movie with Optimus Prime. And in that 2%, he literally spends 1% of it evil and the other 1% of it good. It's the weakest writing I've ever seen, because it's like, I can almost live with Quintessa looking at him and going, do you feel the need to be redeemed? He goes, I do. And suddenly he becomes evil. Okay, so you use mind control. I'll allow it. So the way to shake evil mind control was suddenly Bumblebee can talk. They've literally done nothing else to set up his voice box. Like, they gave him a voice box earlier in the movie and it didn't work, so he took it out.
And he ripped it out.
And then, yeah, and he ripped out his own voice box. Like, okay, great. That's glad we're still doing that gag. And then at the very end of the movie, suddenly he found his magic voice, and that was enough to shake Prime out of evil mind control. It might seem like a picayune point, but it's not strong writing. It's not strong writing at all. And while some people may be willing to live with that, if that was the only detail about the movie that I had an issue with, that would be one thing. But it's one of many. That's the third or fourth one I've mentioned. My biggest issue, other than I thought the Unicron thing was stupid, I think they're just fucking shoehorning it into the plot of the movie because, like, oh well, what haven't we used yet? Well, we haven't used Unicron. Great, Earth is Unicron. Moving on. But Cybertron is in pieces. They drag Cybertron into Earth's orbit, and there isn't massive tidal waves and interplanetary destruction. I mean, look, I'm not trying to be all Neil Tyson Degrassi over here, but even I get elementary physics. If another planet, I think they hit the moon at one point.
They did. They hit the moon.
I mean, there comes a point where I can't accept that this is fiction anymore. This has gotten too stupid. So any one of those things could have been acceptable. When you start piling them up together, you just get this nonsense pile where it's like, okay, well, this wasn't a very well-written movie at all. And performance-wise, the chick who plays Vivian's okay. She's just sort of running around looking confused and hot. Sir Anthony Hopkins is never going to give a bad performance. He sort of just he kind of Sir Alec Guinness is his lines through the whole thing. He's just like, you want me to read what now? Sure, whatever. I'm spending this entire paycheck on hookers. You know, and so Sir Anthony Hopkins just reads his lines, and he's fine. Wahlberg's phoning in his performance, and that's it.
It's about as good as Mark Wahlberg can do. Let's be fair.
He's been better. He's been in some other roles where he actually had to act, and this one, honestly, I feel like he just showed up to set, read his lines, and walked off set again. Yeah, overall, I don't want to belabor the point. Overall, it's a C at best. I wasn't bored, but it's not good.
All right. There's a few things here I want to deal with specifically. Because for some reason recently I've been looking at movies and going, who edited this? Because, I mean, some of it's writing. Who edited your script? What? How many points of failure along the way were there here? Michael Bay's visual editing style has always been erratic. I mean, look at Armageddon, which is a movie I actually enjoy. And I've mentioned this in the past. You want to throw stuff at me? Fine. This is my example of, no, this movie's not very good, but I enjoy it. The editing in that movie is so rapid fire, especially down the stretch, that it's jarring and not in the way, not to any purpose. It doesn't serve a function. It simply is jarring. You get a lot of that here. I mean, for as much as Michael Bay's whole style is, I'm going to make action, he can't seem to shoot action scenes. They're so cut to so many different angles with so many. And this is something that Andrew Graham shared a video with us that I hadn't realized that this particular reason is for why this was bad. The point of focus from cut to cut is so all over the place. You can't visually process it. And you couple that with bad writing, which we've got here in spades. And again, how many points along the way have failed us here? As far as writing goes, teenager that they introduced in the beginning does not need to be there.
Straight up. Yeah, it serves no purpose in this entire movie. Yeah, like they introduced her in the beginning, and then she disappears for 90% of the film, and she, I think, reappeared at the end and serves no purpose.
The only thing she does at the end is her stupid little robot squeaks, blows up the gun turret that's pinning them down. And I've got a much better idea for that.
They could have given that to any character.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I would have done, structurally. The opening, instead of this, you know, big kind of bait and switch with stupid kids who just make you want to punch them, you just have Cade kind of wandering the wastelands of this part of, you know, this part of the country that apparently has been left a wasteland. I mean, that whole scene when, you know, the TRF and the Decepticons attack, it starts out like in a town that looks like it would be abandoned in that part of the country. And if you've never been to that part of the country, you know, that, you know, Dakotas, Montana area. Yeah, that's a real thing.
Would it have killed the filmmakers to have actually made a movie focused on Optimus Prime? Like
apparently,
every other movie they've done so far? Maybe bit more of his journey into space. Maybe show him on Cybertron finding Quintessa. Maybe, you know, them sending Prime on smaller missions of infamy to build, you know, to build up his loyalty to them. And not deal with the same plot with the humans. Because, again, we just did this with the humans in the last movie where they were killing Transformers. It was like, oh, Transformers are now illegal. They were illegal in the last movie.
And the one before that. I mean, the whole, like, last two-thirds of three deals with them being kicked off the planet. I mean, it's just, again, it's just dumb. But this small town, again, in like rural South Dakota, suddenly has like skyscrapers just because Michael Bay wants to film on tall buildings. Deeply stupid. So you start that whole bit with just Cade. You don't need the girl for him to give an exposition dump to about his daughter. You can do that through both visuals and maybe he talks with, you know, the Transformers about, with a couple of the Autobots about it. I mean, really, all you need is that scene where he's on the phone with his daughter but can't speak.
Right.
Because they'll be able to triangulate his location after they voice print ID him. You know, let Mark Wahlberg act to the best of his abilities. And maybe he shares a few lines with, again, one of the Autobots. We don't need another character here. And then at the end, instead of, let's pay off this stupid little junk bot, it's a claptrap. That's really what it is. Borderlands fans know what I'm talking about. They're pinned down by the gun emplacement, and Optimus Prime shows up on the three-headed dragon and saves them. Because for some reason, despite Optimus Prime being the first person to leave Stonehenge and try to get onto the planet of Cybertron and engage in battle, he's the last one to show up. Because logic is not a thing in these movies. I don't feel we need the daddy-daughter issues with Vivian, especially since they don't go anywhere. I mean, if there was some kind of payoff, maybe. We certainly don't need her talking with her mom and her aunts around the table about how she's still single.
I'm fine with a little Michael Bay stupid jokes. What I'm not fine with is let's make her the heir of Merlin and then not have her do anything that pays off that storyline. Zero.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No, yeah, that's a thing too. There's just so much that's bad. And really, I need to bring this up because I've yelled at Zack Snyder about this. Zack Snyder, as a visual director of action, one of his signatures is the maybe slightly faster than normal speed shots going into slow-mo, going back to normal speed. It's just part of his visual style. It has been forever. And it's annoying at times. And I've yelled about it because I feel he's overly reliant on it. I mean, Mark, if you want to get absolutely wasted watching this movie, take a shot every time we get a slow-mo action sequence. I mean, I'd recommend having paramedics on hand. You will probably suffer alcohol poisoning.
Oh, if it wasn't for the slowdowns, the movie would be 90 minutes long.
I'd be okay with that. the last thing I want to touch on is because you brought it up. The real story here, and for the last couple of movies, has actually been about Optimus Prime. But for some reason, Michael Bay and the people in charge of this don't want the Transformers to actually be characters. They don't want them to have arcs. They don't want us to spend a lot of time with them. I mean, maybe it's too expensive. And like, no, the budget. More humans. That's what people want to see. But the best thing about Age of Extinction, that's a very low bar to clear, I'm well aware, was Optimus Prime being just kind of this bitter, disillusioned war veteran trying to kind of come back to grips with, you know, there are things in the world worth fighting for. Kind of finds that at the end when he decides, you can even play it the other way, where instead of finding his purpose as far as, you know, Earth is worth protecting at the end of Age of Extinction, it's just, you know what, I've so had it with all of this, I'm going to find God and kill him. Which is fine, too. I mean, that's it's a perfectly valid place for him to be at emotionally. And then in this movie, the real, actual, interesting story that they could have told, like you said, is Prime falling to Quintessa's influence and then finding redemption when he comes back and has to save Earth. There's an actual story arc there. There's a good movie somewhere there's a good story within that basic framework. It exists. But, I mean, Optimus Prime doesn't make an appearance for the entire, like, again, middle half of this movie. We see him arrive on Cybertron. We see him and Quintessa talk. We see him, again, succumb to mind control, for want of a better phrase. And then nothing until Cybertron shows up. I mean, it's just so stupid. And, I mean, again, somewhere within, I've said this about a few of the other Transformers movies. Somewhere within, even, you know, Revenge of the Fallen. Somewhere within Revenge of the Fallen is a good movie. At least a watchable movie. I mean, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 to 45 minutes shorter and is better edited. But it exists. Dark of the Moon, number 3, has a great war sequence for the final act. The Battle of Chicago, legitimately one of the better battle sequences, certainly of Bay's career. Age of Extinction, again, you have Prime's journey. And here you have, again, the continuation of Prime's journey. That's where the story should be centered. And instead, there's a lot of time with, you know, pseudo-romance between Mark Wahlberg and British lady. And
which, again, I would be able to tolerate if they gave them something to do. But they gave them a mindless...
Mark, she's the love interest. Because Mark Wahlberg didn't have a love interest in the last movie. Studio mandates. There must be a love interest.
They gave them an elongated sequence on that submarine, which went on forever and had no payoff. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. Like, it was, like, by the time we got done with that, I was actually exhausted. And maybe that's why, like, by the time we got to the final sequence, you know, with the fight between the dragon and Optimus Prime and Megatron and whatever, you know, I was like, I don't even know what's happening anymore. It's just like this. Suddenly it was an ECW tag team medley. Everyone showed up. And New Jack came in and hit somebody with a vacuum.
You could have actually cut Megatron completely out of this movie. I mean, that bit where here's the other thing that kills me. When he gets his, you know, compatriots released, as though it's not patently, completely obvious that Michael Bay is pandering here, he actually refers to them as his crew. Now, make your own inferences about that based on voice patterns and visuals pertaining to the robots that he has released. I'll leave that completely up to you guys. I mean, again, that whole thing should have been cut because they're all dead 5 minutes later. It's a superb waste of time.
What a waste.
To no effective payoff.
All right. Anything else?
I hate sequel baiting. I know you do too. And that's all this movie is. I mean, with some of the others, they've at least been somewhat self-contained and not like, please. I mean, again, we said this about a few other movies that we've reviewed where it felt like there's so many issues of writing and issues of story that were shouted down when someone brought it up because we'll fix it in the sequel.
Right.
And I feel like that finally really cropped up here. I mean, the others are only loosely connected via characters rather than overarching stories, which has its own set of problems. But at least you never necessarily feel like they're pandering to you the same way as they are here, in the sense that you're going to see this anyway. Who cares if it's good? We've got another one coming, and it'll make more sense there. I mean, they baited you a bit with...
strangely enough, this felt like the most cynical of the five movies. Like, at least with the first three, I felt like they were trying to tell, whether they succeeded or not, the whole of this conversation, but they were trying to tell a cohesive story. And with Age of Extinction, clearly this was the beginning of what should have been Optimus Prime's story. But, you know, in and of itself, it told a complete story. Age of Extinction, I think, from soup to nuts, was a complete story. And even though it
That's
ends
fair.
with Prime going off into space, it was sort of the last bit to a story that had concluded itself, which I was fine with. With this one, it was like, this just seemed like it was connective tissue to another story they wanted to tell, almost as if they were bored midway through making this movie, going, we want to do something. Wah, I'm bored. I don't want to do this movie. I want to do Unicron. Can we get to Unicron? When are we going to get to Unicron? Unicron.
Look, Michael, I know you have a problem with this, but just make the movie you said you were going to make. You can put your blocks in their separate color palettes, and then we'll deal with...
No. No, Unicron. I want Unicron now.
Yeah, it's... I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but yeah, I agree with you. This is really... This really does feel... I mean, again, I thought Age of Extinction was crap. But at least within and of itself, the story... But my issues with Age of Extinction are quality of writing more so than structure of writing. And editorial choices. which was kind of the crux of what we discussed last time. There's no, here's where you need to make these cuts. And here's how we can improve this. And this one, yeah, like halfway through, they just decided, screw it. You know, we've got half a script. We'll stretch it out with prolonged action sequences that don't matter. And exposition dumps and John Turturro for some reason. I love John Turturro, all right? He is the best part of these movies. Any of the Transformers movies, John Turturro is the best part of them. All right? Let me be very clear about that.
Nope. I still can't get it out of my head when he's like, you're a bad girl. Bad girls are hot. I like them. I'm like, ugh, you perv.
Again, it's intentional, right? And it's, don't get me wrong, it's stupid.
It's horrible.
It really is. I'm not defending the quality of the writing.
He was like a government agent when he said that.
Yes, because Michael Bay hates the government. Haven't we established this already?
Okay.
But no, again, he is the best part of these movies because he's actually somewhat humorous. I mean, great character actors can do that. And John Turturro is one of the finest character actors of his generation. And here all he does is talk on the phone to Anthony Hopkins. I mean, this movie is just bad. It's poorly constructed. It's poorly put together. The acting is serviceable, but I mean, again, like you said, Anthony Hopkins is never going to really give a bad performance, but there's only so much you can do with the material.
Yeah. All right. You ready for the money?
Because that really is the interesting thing about this movie in particular. Because,
okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here we go.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
All righty. On a budget of $217 million, we currently stand at $272 million. Transformers 5 opens with the franchise low as Wonder Woman surpasses Batman v Superman domestically. Paramount's Transformers The Last Knight took the number one spot this weekend as expected, but that opening was the lowest the franchise has seen thus far, by a rather significant margin, as a lot of attention will now turn towards the film's international run. Yeah, basically, if this doesn't do well in China and, like, India, it's not looking good for this franchise. Only one of the previous four Transformers features opened on a Wednesday, and that was 2011's Transformers Dark of the Moon. the third feature in the now five-film franchise, and it debuted with $162.6 million over its first five days in release, $97.8 million of that from the three-day weekend. By contrast, Transformers The Last Knight brought in a mere $69.1 million over its first 5 days in release, an estimated $45.3 million of which over the three-day weekend. While this is relatively on par with the $70 million industry expectations, it puts added pressure on the $217 million production's international run. And then it gets into some of the foreign receipts. Let me say this. Looking at worldwide for just a moment, you know, the Pirates got off to a slow start too, and it's currently the number four movie in the world behind Guardians of the Galaxy at $680 million. So, you know, is there time and space for this thing to pick up an audience? Not in the United States there isn't, but around the world, I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, when I look at Pirates of the Caribbean, it did $160 million domestic, but $519 million overseas. Now, when I look at The Fate of the Furious, $225 million domestic, $1 billion overseas. So, I mean, and that's more than Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast was $500 million domestic, $753 million overseas. So, you know, I think American audiences are kind of experiencing this sort of fatigue and frustration with the Transformers that we're talking about. And so they're having a difficulty finding an audience there, but they don't really make these movies for just American audiences anymore. They make them for large foreign audiences who, I don't know, maybe they're not as critical or they don't care as much. I don't know. I can't explain why, other than when they were destroying Hong Kong, and I guess people could say, well, look, we're on TV, why there's such interest internationally in this kind of a movie. But maybe this is a high watermark. Maybe this is one of those moments where even the foreign audiences look at this thing and go, huh, we now see things the way you do, Americans. This is shite. In any case, rounding out the top five, we've got Beauty and the Beast, still in the number one spot. Can't knock the hustle, baby. Fate of the Furious, number two. Guardians of the Galaxy, still hanging on there at $850 million. Not quite hitting that billion-dollar mark like we thought. Pirates of the Caribbean.
I don't think it will at this point either.
No. It seems to be petering out. Pirates of the Caribbean is currently at $680 million. Wonder Woman is at $657 million. Logan at this point is just, you know, sitting there waiting to see how many more films can make more than it did. At 618, and then you've got rounding out the top 10, Kong Skull Island, Boss Baby, 50 Shades Darker, Your Name, and that's that. The Mummy is currently sitting at $344 million at number 12. That's ahead of The Great Wall and Resident Evil, Lego Batman. So Alien Covenant has died at $227 million, just ahead of Smurfs Lost Village. Cars 3, which we reviewed last week, currently sitting at $143 million, not exactly the billion-dollar Pixar movie that – not exactly the billion-dollar picture Pixar wanted. But, you know, maybe things move on a little faster. It's currently ahead of King Arthur, which, of course, died on the vine, and Power Rangers, both at $140 million apiece, and just ahead of Baywatch at $137 million. I really don't have anything more to add to it than that. I think Transformers has some work to do to get its audience back, especially in the United States. There'll always be an audience for in this country for big, dumb action, but they don't make these movies for just a niche audience. These are supposed to be – I mean, Age of Extinction, I think, was the number one movie of that year. It made over $1 billion. The other Transformers movies were around that much, their worldwide total. If you're Paramount, you were banking on The Last Knight being a billion-dollar picture, and if it comes nowhere near that, I mean, right now, if it's like $500 to $600 million, that's not great. I mean,
that's barely profitable.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where, well, back to the drawing board. I don't think they'll cancel the Bumblebee spinoff. I think Bumblebee has enough cachet with kids that it's worth making the movie. But they
have
to seriously look
especially
at
one that's going
to
be set during World War II. Super happy fun times for all the kids.
I thought it was, no, it's set during the 80s.
Sorry, I must have misread. So I just, that whole bit about Bumblebee's been around forever and participated in World War II, I mean, where did that come from?
Doesn't matter. Does it? Does any of this matter? In any case,
it doesn't
I think
matter.
Paramount...
None of this matters.
Michael Bay has already said he's not coming back for whatever the next Transformers movie is, and it's slated for 2019, so I think they get another director on there. I think it's a conversation to have as to what director they want to write the ship. And, you know, and I think they've got some work to do with rebuilding the trust of the audience before this really starts to make some money. They're going to need to do some adjusting on this next movie. But they've also written themselves into a corner because now the expectation is Unicron, and that's not something you're going to do on the cheap. And if you do, you're going to anger a lot of people. So we'll see.
Okay, serious question here. Do you think Michael Bay poisoned this well on purpose? Like, he knew he wasn't coming back for another one and went, you know what, maybe I'm just going to make sure nobody else is in a position to do anything with this either.
I legitimately think he got bored making this movie. Like,
I buy that as well, but I mean, just as a general, thing, like, somewhere in his head, he went, man, I'm bored. I've been making these movies. I want to do other stuff, even though my other stuff bombs, which it does, by the way. Bay only has real relevance as a draw for Transformers. I mean, I think the last thing he did that wasn't a Transformers movie was Pain and Gain, which I do believe struggled financially.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'm correct about that, but I'd have to double check. But just if somewhere in his mind he kind of went, you know what, I'm bored, I'm done, not coming back for another one. I wonder if I can make this bad enough to where I can actually kill the franchise on its way out.
I don't think he thinks that way. Like, you're giving him a lot of credit for thinking in 3 and 4 dimensions. And I'm pretty
That's
sure
true.
He got it forward. I'm bored. Unicron. And that was it.
I don't know. I mean, look, there have been plenty of stupid professional wrestlers who, you know, significantly damaged a territory on their way out the door.
Yeah, there's something to be said for intent, and then there's something to be said for, you know, just doing it because you're a dummy and you don't know any better. And honestly, I don't think a lot of effort.
Little from column A, little from column B.
Yeah. But it's a strong accusation. I mean, I get that we're doing somewhat of a bit here, but it's a strong accusation to say that a professional filmmaker purposely tanks his own movie, you know, because if I can't have it, nobody can. I mean, he'd never work in Hollywood again if it got out that was true. So I tend to think the simplest answer is the right one. And the simplest answer is, he just, like, got ADD midway through making this film and was like, fuck. And then Prime comes down and beheads a bunch of guys. And there's a dragon. And Mark Wahlberg's got Excalibur and stops Prime from getting killed. And end credits. Okay. Sure.
I don't know. This feels, and since you kind of brought up this being like the most cynical of the movies, maybe that's because I finally feel like maybe everyone realizes they've been conned the whole time. This is the last, this is the final bit of fleecing from the Rain Man before he jumps at it, before he jumps in his car and books out of town.
Robert Winfrey standing on his pedestal going, finally, you see it my way. You laughed at me. You all laughed when I told you the first Transformers was garbage. And now you're finally coming along. Yeah, then the next one's going to do $1 billion, and you'll be right back to where we started.
Look, hang on. If the next one is good, and the next one looks good, I made the predictions. I made the predictions on these movies based on known data, and then I analyzed them after the fact to the best of my abilities. I mean, it's not like I said these can't be good. The likelihood was very small. But there's no mandate from on high that Transformers movies must suck.
I'm legitimately disappointed. You know, I went into this, you know, expecting a lot of fun. And that's the thing, is like, I hate to be that guy, but I didn't find this movie to be particularly fun. But I think the lack of fun comes from the fact that it's just a poorly written movie. Are you ready to delve into the wild, wacky world of professional film critics?
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
So this is the worst reviewed film of the summer, which I find hilarious. And look, the whole point of this is to point out the sort of ridiculousness of professional film critics and how bad they are at their job. There's a lot, like, if you think we're being overly harsh on this movie or being negative, you should see some of these film critics. We're at least attempting to give you critical analysis. I'm pretty sure a lot of these people, like, would have preferred to be waterboarded than to watch these movies. There's a lot of, like, hoity-toity, like, oh.
Wait.
This is
telling
that
could have. You're telling me you would have been okay with me being waterboarded for, say, 5 to 10 minutes instead of
having to watch
the movie?
Nope, you don't get out of it.
Damn it. I might have taken that.
I know you would have. One of the things I hate about the Movie Fights podcast is they'll have a lot of these women who work in the industry, whether it's through like some sort of like podcast or whatever, like Collider, you know, or they work in the industry proper, and they have such a highfalutin sense of what good film is that it becomes almost unbearable to listen to them talk. And it's like, as a critic, I think you need to give the room sufficient room to breathe and be its own thing and judge it on its elements, not judge it by the standards that you think a film should be, because you are not the end-all be-all of film craft. And I think we do a fair job of that here. So and I'm just pointing all that out because as I read through these last night reviews, some of them are very funny, actually. I mean, obviously, a lot of the reviewers hated these things, but this is also becoming the in thing to hate the Transformers, to be a film critic and hate the Transformers movies. You know, it's like, oh, I can't. It's like being a food critic and having a cheese dog. Like, oh, well, I can't lower myself to really enjoy a harmless snack. I have to point out that this is, you know, that hot dogs are all lips and assholes, you know, and the Cheese Whiz is horrible, but you don't. You could just appreciate a cheese dog for what it is. That said, I don't know. Did you want to weigh in there, or are you like, please shut up, Rattle? I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, I agree. I mean, look, one of the reasons that I like what we do here is you have your perspective, I have mine. We share our perspectives, but we also try to hold a film along what are generally considered to be best practices of filmmaking, and
right.
Then go into, you know, okay, so maybe this isn't the best movie within the following bits of context, but parts of it are good. And if it's only trying to achieve X, you know, if it's only trying to achieve a certain goal, does it succeed at that goal rather than, well, is it, it's not The Godfather, so it must be terrible.
Right.
I mean, again, you and I have
so
different standards for what we enjoy, but
yeah. Right. I mean,
that's also
the
fun of
the
this
person.
Because we can differentiate a little bit between whether or not a film is enjoyable and whether or not it's successful, again, to varying degrees in places.
I'm going to read a handful of these, but just know that this it's a lot of the same review over and over and over again with these people. I mean, when you're talking about like a hive collective, they all think they're so witty. It's like, nope, you're all repeating one another. Tim Grierson of the Screen International, the end of the world can't come soon enough in Transformers The Last Night.
I mean, let me say this, as far as that goes. Another way to get completely plastered watching this movie, take a shot every time someone says it's the end of days or the end of the world or some minor variation thereof. Because you will be blackout drunk.
Let me say this. I'm getting a little, and I'm going to go back to movie fights again. A lot of the people on movie fights and a lot of these reviewers have this thing about, like, is this movie necessary? Do we need this? And I know I've said this before, but it bears repeating. Fuck you, people. You know what you need? Movies need to sell tickets. And if people are willing to buy tickets, then its necessity is irrelevant. And it really bothers me that it is not up to the film reviewer. It is not up to these people who go on movie fights, who work in the industry, to start making determinations as to what movies, as to what the market, and here's where I become like a hardcore capitalist, but to what the market will accept as an appropriate movie. They can make Minions movies to the end of time as long as people are buying them. I may not like them. It still bothers me that Minions made $1 billion last year, or whatever year it was. But I say that because, like, the next one's going to get into, it's time to abandon these movies. I'll read the whole thing, but it's like, but I saw this as a theme too. It's time to abandon this. Fuck you. Who gave you the right? You know, if no one showed up to this movie and you said it's time to abandon this because no one saw it, that would be a logical thing to say. But it's time to abandon it because it doesn't meet my particular taste. Oh, go fuck yourself. Go choke on a tailpipe. Is that wrong? am I being unnaturally surly?
A little, but at the same – I mean, look. If the point you – if you have arrived at the point with these movies as a reviewer and as a fan or as an observer of film that you guys are clearly out of ideas, which – they pretty clearly are. I mean, we're down to Unicron is Earth because reasons. You're creatively bankrupt at this point. You have arrived with this particular film at a combination of not no one seeing it, but there's such a diminished return on what was expected and what the others have done, combined with this being... whatever you feel about the franchise as a whole here, whether you're like me and right. can't stand the majority of them or like Mark and tend to enjoy them, I don't care where you fall on the spectrum here. This is unequivocally, in terms of currently box office receipts, critical reception, and film craft, the worst. We've arrived at a point where there's a legitimate argument that can be made to say, you know, maybe we ought to rethink this.
Okay.
There's a world
we're
of difference between...
We're not there yet financially. No, we're not there yet financially. This movie, we're not talking it's at the end of its run and it's barely made its budget. Where
I know.
There's
a reasonable amount of projection that can be done about the profitability of this film at this point, though. There's unreasonable amounts as well. But there's a world of difference between looking at a film in terms of both reviews, craft quality, fan response, because believe it or not, the average fan response from this, I seem to recall on CinemaScore, is a B or a B+. And really...
It depends on the age group. Like, younger people rated it an A, believe it or not.
Fair enough. Look, young people are entertained by jangling keys.
Oh, stop
right?
it. Be nice.
I don't mean that as an insult. I was entertained by jangling keys for many years.
Look, in the interest of time here, Matt Goldberg of Collider, it's time to abandon the nihilistic characters, the bad jokes, the oppressive set pieces, and start anew. The best thing you can do with Transformers The Last Night is leave it behind as quickly as possible. Yep.
Okay.
That's why I went off on that rant.
There's a few things here that need to be unpacked. One, I don't think Michael Bay could spell nihilism, much less insert it as a theme into his film. Two, okay, the bad jokes got to go, especially in the quantity that we got them in this movie. But again, calling on an, I mean, if you arrive at the conclusion that, you know, maybe it's time we both rethink and possibly even reboot this with some new people involved, a new creative direction, that's a potentially valid point to arrive at, but your methodology of getting there is flawed, and your call to let's all forget this didn't that this ever happened is a bit much. I mean, the only movie I've ever seen that I tended to feel that way about was Cars 2. And thankfully, everyone seems to have adopted that approach.
Hilary A. White of the Sunday Independent in Ireland. The movie equivalent of a bag of tangled up Christmas lights. All soul-destroying untidiness and faulty circuitry. Yeah, it's a bit hyperbolic. It's funny, but I mean, there's a couple of these that I found to be insulting. Some of them I'm going to give the people who reviewed this and gave and made like funny lines out of it a pass. You know, we all gotta make a funny sometimes.
That's somewhat accurate. I mean, again, I think she takes it a little bit too far, but the cinematic equivalent of, you know, once a year I have to get into this mess of wires that invariably tangles itself, is difficult to unpack and understand, and faulty half the time, is really not a terrible analogy in this instance.
Nope, I'll give you that one. Charlotte O'Sullivan of the London Evening Standard. Though convoluted and mostly indistinguishable from Piffle, it's by no means the worst of the bunch.
Oh, it is. It is far and away.
I don't know. I mean, Revenge of the Fallen still makes no sense to me.
Hold on. Revenge of the Fallen sucks, all right? Let me be very clear about that. But the basic premise of Revenge of the Fallen is powerful, you know, former guy is fearful to come out of his castle because he knows that, you know, only a prime can kill him. And as long as there's a prime out there somewhere, he's in danger. So get rid of the last of the primes and I'll show up. The quest to bring Optimus back from the dead. That's actually pretty solid. Now, the fact that it is overly complicated with leg-humping robots and Sam in college and, well, we actually need to come to Earth for a specific reason and Devastator's balls. Okay, no. Problems. Problems out the wazoo. But
okay.
At least they kind of hit the main storyline and follow it, as opposed to this. And maybe it's
fair
a
enough.
Close race between this and Revenge of the Fallen, but I don't think it's that close.
Your mileage may vary.
Fair
Evan
enough.
Evan Griffin of the Young Folks. Blockbusters have no excuse to be stupid this far into the 21st century.
Well, that's not true at all.
Yeah,
that's just fundamentally
see my previous
untrue. Hold on. I hate most stupid movies, right? I've been crying for years on this show about blockbusters that are dumb, making a lot of money. While there's one or two a year, usually more than that, but there's a few each year that can be big budget, can be entertaining, and can also be well-made, thought-provoking, interesting, you know, along those lines. However, the point you've arrived at here, sir, is that there's no excuse for them being this stupid. Well, let's rewind the clock 2 years, right? And let's have a look at Age of Extinction, which, for as much as there's people out there who love and enjoy it, and God bless you, it's a very stupid movie. Let's take a look at the second highest grossing movie this year, shall we? Because Fate of the Furious is not exactly intellectual candy. No, there's a perfectly valid reason that they're still making stupid movies, because they still make money.
Right.
Your conclusion is deeply erroneous.
Tim Martain of the Mercury. Michael Bay's latest big robot action movie is partly based on King Arthur legend because, well, why not take a big steaming dump on that story as well? Like I said, some of these are funny.
Fair. I mean, look, I think I said at the top of this, it's, we start with a flashback to King Arthur because that's the only historical figure Michael Bay's even aware of. I can kind of stand by that in this instance.
Mm-hmm. Matt Brunson of Creative Loafing. At 7 hours, 15 minutes, this sets the record as the longest theatrical feature ever made. Keep in mind that I did not have a watch on me during the screening, so my estimate of the running time may be slightly off, but it certainly felt that long. Uh-huh.
Yeah. No. It's a fair... I mean, he goes to excess here, but it's a fair point that this movie feels long. I mean, Age of Extinction was longer than this, and I pointed out, you know, Mark and I both pointed out various places it could have been cut, but this feels longer than Age of Extinction. Much the same way that the Conan movie starring Jason Momoa feels longer than Conan the Barbarian starring Schwarzenegger, despite the Schwarzenegger movie running about 20 minutes longer.
Emily Yoshida of New York Magazine and Vulture, top critic. I can barely summon a feeling about The Last Knight. If anything, I feel slightly worried about how little I hated it. Yep.
This is hang on. I understand the perspective. This is a film review, not your personal diary or your therapy session. Well, I was watching this movie, and then I realized I have deep-seated issues with my mother. I mean, you're a professional film critic. You're proud of this? I got paid to, instead of talking about the movie, actually bring up that I'm worried about my own malaise because I can't be bothered to muster the internal angst to write about this as a terrible movie. How about the fact that you're now using a professional publication as your, like, live blog on your journal to self-discovery that you're going to title, what, Eat Film Love? Come on.
Sarah Michelle Fetters of MovieFreak.com. I'm not sure they're even trying anymore. That's valid.
That's fair. No, that's fair.
Eric,
there's so little effort
in
this movie.
Eric D. Snyder of EricDSnyder.com. The film quickly devolves into undifferentiated shooting, yelling, and exploding.
Yeah.
Jamal Dean Grootboom. That's an awesome name. Jamal Dean Grootboom of the Independent Online in South Africa. Nothing in this film makes sense. Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, no, it's a stretch. It's a stretch.
Sonny Bunch of the Washington Free Beacon. Transformers: The Last Knight is kind of entertaining, in the way I assume riding a roller coaster while on meth is probably kind of entertaining.
No, that's not the appropriate analogy to make. I mean, look, this gets brought up. I mean, you brought it up yourself. We're approaching pure spectacle absent storyline, right? Absent narrative, which is all porn is.
Yes.
It's just watch stuff on screen.
Yep. Said that at the beginning.
I'm agreeing with you. That's why I'm bringing your point back up.
Michael Smith of Tulsa World. After having seen 5 of these films, which equates to close to a day of my life I'll never get back, I can say Transformers 5 is on a level with Transformers 1. Oh, that's not fair.
See, one's actually the best of them, as a general rule. One has plenty of problems, but I will. You know what? It occurs to me that in the time that, much like this gentleman, the time I've spent watching these movies is time I will never get back, and I could have watched something good like the first 2 Godfather movies.
Oliver Jones of the New York Observer. And this is gonna be the last one. I'm not even going to try to explain the story after watching this movie. I may never try to explain another story ever again.
Well, you found someone this thing broke worse than you, at least.
Yeah, it broke a lot of people, apparently. All right, next week on Damn You, Hollywood is Despicable Me. It'll actually be July 4th. So, is that going to interrupt your fireworks if we do that, or do we need to move this review?
I think we'll be okay.
Okay, I have little kids, so I'm.
I mean,
not
we don't get. Look, these reviews wrap up around 9 my time, so it's only like just starting to get dark enough for it at that point. I don't think we'll have a problem on my end.
Okay, then next week is Despicable Me 3. The rest of this week is Transformers week, as we said. We did Revolution on Monday. We also did an extra special Transformers, the movie from 1986, audio commentary, the very first of its kind here on the Rattlers and Broadcasting Network. We've been asked for a while to do audio commentaries. Well, we're finally getting to them. That will be the first. Yeah, believe it or not. I've been asked quite a number of times. We've got that. Now, tomorrow night on the Metal Hammer of Doom, we're going to review the 1986 soundtrack because it's awesome. And then on Thursday, Ronnie Adams and I are going to review Transformers Prime Season 1, written more coherently by the people who wrote these movies, oddly enough. Like, the series, like, you would never think it was written by the same people. The Transformers Prime makes perfect sense.
I imagine there were less studio notes. Just throwing it out there.
Probably. In any case, yeah, it's a fun animated feature that was on the Hub. We're going to look at the first season of it, which I believe is 26 or so episodes. And then Friday, the Screaming Boy podcast is going to be all things Transformers, cups, crotch, and gun nipples. just listen to the commentary, you'll understand. But that's what Ronnie Adams is going to do. That's what we got going on this week. All right. What's going on in your world?
Well, last Saturday I covered Bellator 180 / Bellator NYC and wanted to die because I hate Bellator.
You're not a fan of circuses.
I don't mind circuses. I imagine that if we were to complete that analogy.
What was so bad about this show? You had one that ended in an accidental injury. You had one where a big shock, Fedor got knocked out. And then you had one where Chael Sonnen and Chael Sonnen. What was wrong with this event? It was a UFC event. But my point is, he was doing the same exact thing in the UFC.
I hated it when he was doing it in the UFC. Let's be fair.
Right, so this isn't about
I hated Chael Sonnen for a long time.
So this isn't about this being a circus, then. This is about you didn't like who fought.
No. I don't like Bellator in general. The fact that I was watching Wanderlei Silva and Chael Sonnen on a Bellator event was just like giving myself a paper cut and then soaking it in salt.
Okay. I don't understand.
Hang on, since you asked, let me be brief. Bellator, as a general rule, is the antithesis of what I enjoy about MMA. Now, that's just me.
I got that.
All right? This is not objective.
I believe I said that when you said you don't like circuses.
I like circuses. I don't like... Again, let's complete that analogy then. If this is the circus, then in this particular instance, I prefer to... I'm against animal cruelty, right?
Okay.
I mean, I like circuses. I really do. I don't like circuses in MMA. And that's
what Bellator is. Right. I didn't suggest you don't like Ringling Brothers. I'm saying you don't like spectacle in MMA.
I don't like pointless spectacle. I get the need for big events. I get the need for big personalities. But Fedor, who shouldn't be fighting, and still nearly knocked out Matt Mitrione, Chael Sonnen and Vanderlei Silva in 2017. This was the most Bellator event ever, right? The fight leading into the pay-per-view was awful, which everyone said it would be. Anyone with half a brain who saw Ryan Bader and Phil Davis are fighting for 5 rounds and thought, oh, well, that might not suck. I mean, what are you doing? Then the opener was all right. Then you had the hot free agent, the hot prospect debuting in professional MMA get tapped out in 24 seconds.
Yeah, that actually came up in the fact or fiction questions I got sent today. And I'm like, who thought this was a good idea?
Scott Coker. I don't know. Then you have your homegrown champion and face of your promotion, Michael Chandler, go down to freak injury inside of 3 minutes because he couldn't walk right. Then you have Fedor and Matt Mitrione I wanted them to knock each other out, a double knockout, just because it would have been, again, the most Bellator thing ever. Then to derail even the freak show fun aspect of this, not what I watch MMA for, but there are those who enjoy that. Let's just grind that to a screeching halt for Neiman Gracie versus Dave Marfone. And then Chael Sonnen's going to fight. And again, anyone with half a brain knows, well, if he can double leg you, he's going to hold you there and whisper sweet nothings in your ear for 15 minutes, which is all he did here.
Yep. I don't know.
And then deliver a cringeworthy promo, which, guess what? He did. I hate Bellator. They are just everything I dislike about the sport. And again, plenty of people enjoy it. Godspeed and party on. Not here to judge. Just me.
I'll allow it.
Sunday I covered UFC Fight Night 112. Wherein a fighter crapped the cage. Not a joke. not a metaphor. Literal poop.
Shit happens.
Indeed it does. It was not the worst event. I mean, BJ Penn fought, which is just depressing at this point, and lost, which was expected. The main event sadly ended in controversy. It was just a night of fights. I mean, none of it was great, but none of it was really awful. This Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show will be previewing the Ultimate Fighter Season 25 finale. Look, let's all just pray nothing bad happens to Michael Johnson or Justin Gaethje between now and then, because that fight should be awesome. The rest of that card is nothing. It's a lot of nothing. We will also be previewing UFC 213, which is baller. No, seriously, the main card for UFC 213, this card's not going to draw a whole lot, but this is an awesome card. The main card is Amanda Nunes versus Valentina Shevchenko for the bantamweight title. These two had a good fight the first time around. They've both gotten better since then. Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker for the interim middleweight belt. They're deciding who the best middleweight in the world is. It's between these two. Great fight. Great fight. Robbie Lawler's fighting Donald Cerrone. I mean, come on. Come on. Do I have to sell you guys on that one, MMA fans out there? Fabricio Verdum and Alistair Overeem are fighting. That could be ugly. And Anthony Pettis is fighting Jim Miller. Guys, please. That main card is great. I'm just hoping it holds together. So we'll be previewing those two events. Then July 7th and 8th, I'll have coverage of those two events back-to-back because yay me. So stop by in the MMA zone of 411mania.com to follow along, say hello, tell a few jokes. I appreciate it all. So you can look forward to all of that. And then next week, Mark and I get to talk about Despicable Me 3. And see how I'm kind of looking forward to this. I mean, I like the first two, you know, there's not a lot to dislike as far as those two movies go. So hopefully they can keep that up for three. And yeah, I think that's it as far as, you know, major announcements in my schedule. for the next week. You went through everything you had to, Mark. I hope you feel better. And thanks for, you know, kind of gutting through your illness to be here and do the show with me.
I'm okay. I got better as the night went on. I was shivering when we first started. I've been wrapped in a blanket through this whole podcast like an old woman, but I'm not shivering currently. So whatever. Yeah. As long as I'm not passing out or shivering or anything else or in serious pain, you know, I'm not going to complain.
All right. Well, I'm glad I could also get you to nap a little bit here and there.
Wasn't your fault. All right. For Robert.
Go ahead. You got it.
For Robert Winfrey, I am your mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified. We'll be back next week on Independence Day. Be well, be safe, and behave. Hey, Blog Talk Radio, play those dulcet tones.
Blog Talk's been screwing with us. It's been screwing with our soundboard for most of the episode.
God damn it.
Let me try. Hang on. You know what? With apologies to Clutch, I think we're just going to call it there. As the perfect caveat to this episode, Blog Talk craps out on our soundboard. Night, everybody.
There we go. Good night, everybody.